Thanks for your suggestion, Peter Pacheco. All right, here we are with the Saturday Night Special. Welcome back. I just want to make sure that our audio is good. Can you guys hear me? I'm seeing to make sure that our audio is good. So let me know if you can hear me for this to come through. And as you know, there's always some kind of issues whenever I start the show, as I'm starting to do all of these different things that we have going on. So anyways, welcome back to the Saturday Special. It seems like you can hear everything. I'm glad. I'm Chris Jericho. And of course, we're going to start with our customary cheers to you guys, Le Champion glass here. It's been a good week, man. Just had a blast with that street fight on Wednesday, AEW Dynamite. Someone just said, who came up with the idea for the golf cart? That was Kenny Omega. It was really cool because it was all four of us working together to put on this really cool performance, this really cool match. And that whoever took that picture of Sammy just running like this with Kenny just like, and that's like it was such a good spot. And that's why I really enjoyed that whole that whole creative process of putting these things together, because that's something that you guys might not realize. Like, obviously we get to the arena at 2 or 3, and then the match, you know, the show starts at 8, and everyone's like, how long did it take for you guys to put together that match? And basically 3 hours. Oh, wow. The camera's like, well, next time let us know if you're going to use some of these props. And I'm like, we didn't even know. We didn't know we were going to use a ice machine until we got there because we didn't know there was going to be an ice machine. So you kind of look around, see what you can find, and go from there. So we got Hurricane Helms is on the show today, my old friend Shane Helms. Really excited to have him. And thank you guys so much for joining us last week with Fozzie. That was a really good time as well. So it's going to be another great show. I got a couple things to discuss at the beginning. We'll answer some questions right now. Two-part question from Aaron Banks. Thoughts on the Beach Boys, favorite song. Don't Worry Baby is great. Good Vibrations is still the best. And the Scottish band Nazareth. I mean, come on. Who doesn't like Hair of the Dog, which might actually be a good sing-along tonight. That sounds like a good one. But also really like Turn Out the Lights, the Captain Said. Which one is that? I don't remember. Lots of good stuff from those bands for sure. Matt Beaver. Beaver? Did you just say Beaver? Paul Stanley. I like shaved beaver. All right, Matt LeChampion, can you shout out my wife, Carrie Ann? Carrie Ann, she worships you, especially your abs. Ooh, well, thank you, Carrie Ann. I appreciate that. The abs are still there. We've had some quarantine food, but hey, we're all working hard to stay in shape. A lot of kickboxing over this whole quarantine. Peter Pacheco, you should redo the Judas video and use the Inner Circle in it. Well, that's fine, except for the Judas video already has like almost 40 million views. So I think we're doing pretty good as it is. Skywalker says, can you say, yeah, boy? Yeah, boy. There you go. Got those questions out of the way. Someone asked me if this is a bowling ball behind me, and the answer is yes. I should have turned the other way. I'm sorry. I had no idea that this even existed. It's a Chris Jericho bowling ball. And they made these about 20 years ago. And I never even knew, like I said, that they existed. And then somebody had one, and I haven't seen it for like 15, 20 years. I was just bitching and complaining. I got to find a Chris Jericho bowling ball. So actually, a couple fans sent me this. So thank you so much for that. I finally have the Chris Jericho bowling ball after all this time. And don't forget, once again, a little bit of the bubbly. We still have some cases left. And literally, when I say there's only a few cases left, there really only is because we've sold like, oh my gosh, and almost 30,000 of these things. So if you enjoy it, thank you. If you want to try it out, go to littlebitofthebubbly.com for the bubbly. And, to be quite honest with you, if you're going to grab a case of something during a coronavirus, this is the type of case you want. So once again, I'm going to create the banner here. It's Little Bit of the bubbly.com. If you're looking to get some bubbly, I'm going to put this banner up on the screen and you guys can go check it out if you want. Little bit of the bubbly.com. The other thing I was going to say is sad to hear about the passing of Little Richard today. If you don't know Little Richard, obviously one of the pioneers of rock and roll. I mean, if you're younger, you might not know the name. He did, Jimmy Fruity, Good Golly Miss Molly, Long Tall Sally, Rip It Up, Lucille. So many great songs that he did. But not only was he a great singer and a pioneer, but I actually met Little Richard and had some experiences with him when I did the show Celebrity Duets back in 2006. And I wrote something today on my Instagram. If you guys want to go check that out, but I'll paraphrase it for you now. So he was one of the judges of the show. It was like a singing show. And he was not there a lot because whatever religion he was practicing, I think it was some form of Judaism or maybe Seventh-day Adventist or something like that. And he had to be home before sundown. So he would come and do whatever taping that he had to do, and then he would split because if the sun's going down at 7, he needed to be out of there. So we never really saw him much. And the times when we did see him, he was kind of quiet and didn't really say much. But I know they liked me because I was only on the show for a very short time. But he said, whatever song I sang, he's like, boy, you just made my big toe. What did he say? You made my big toe wiggle in my boot. And I was like, ooh, I made Little Richard's big toe wiggle. Big toe. That was pretty cool. And so then he finally is going to perform. He's going to do Good Golly Miss Molly. And for whatever reason, I was one of the people on the show that they asked to be on stage with him. So he was 73, I think, at the time. So he was kind of walking pretty slow. And he had some handlers that kind of had to help him up onto this platform where the piano was, because they're going to push him out to start his performance. So once they got him up on that pedestal, on that stool, he really was kind of there for the rest of the duration, for the rest of the rehearsal. He couldn't really move around a lot, et cetera, et cetera. So I went over to him like, this is my chance. Like, how much of a chance do you get to talk to little Richard? So I went over to him and I struck up a conversation. Obviously, it was, you know, an older guy. And he, you know, I was probably like Chris Farley in the Chris Farley Show. Little Richard, you're awesome. But we talked about like the Beatles and about his fashion sense and that sort of stuff, you know, pioneering rock and roll or whatever. So finally he starts playing some chords on his piano. And as he's noodling, he goes, sing something, man. And as you do, so he's playing little chords and I'm just kind of going, na, 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 da, na, 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 whatever the hell I was doing, kind of scatting a little bit, but he's like just tinkling the ivories. And it didn't last long, probably only, I don't know, it might've been 30 seconds or a minute, but to me it seemed like, you know, hours. And then finally we had to move on to do whatever it was that we were going to do for the show. But I couldn't believe it. Like, dude, I fucking jammed with Little Richard. Like, that's one of those things where I said, if I ever meet Paul McCartney, I would want to tell him something that's not just like, you're awesome. I would say, hey man, I jammed with Little Richard. Have you? So it was a pretty cool moment. So God bless Little Richard, and thanks so much for all you did for rock and roll. And for always being very cool to me, the guy who made your big toe wiggle. Oh, yeah. All right. Hurricane Helms is in the chamber here. We're getting ready to go. Just to answer a couple more questions. Misty Reese says, please sing happy birthday to Jaden. He's 8 years old. Okay, so we're going to put that on the list of things to do. Maybe Hurricane will join me in a happy birthday sing-along, which I think we sang happy birthday for somebody last week on the Fozzie Show. So I'm going to write down Jaden, and he's 8 years old, and we'll do a little happy birthday for him. Later. So don't let me forget this, because once the show gets rolling and once the Yeah Boys start disappearing, you never know where the show's going to go. So Joseph Palomino says Pineapple Pete should be the TNT champion. I say, shut your mouth, you dumb idiot. All right, your casual fan, Mr. Jericho, you're so loud, I can hear you on mute. Is that okay? Sorry, just making sure that I'm a good orator. And then we also have another cat over here who says, what's been your favorite US pay-per-view match in AEW so far? Maybe the one with Moxley or the one with Cody were both great. The street fight we just had this week was fun as well. So we'll answer more questions as we continue along with Mr. Hurricane Helms. And if there's no technical difficulties, I'll be surprised. We can see him. Can we hear him?
Yo, what it is?
What it is? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
What it is?
What's going on, mate?
What you got on your head there, man?
There's a it's a smiley face thing, but there's a bullet hole right between the eyes. So from a distance, you think I'm happy, but on closer inspection, you realize.
Hey, man, it's funny because we've been talking a little bit lately, and I've been doing this Saturday special just for something to do during the lockdown. So when we were talking, it's like, what a great guy to have on the show, and great to see you again, man. It's been a while. I think we ran into an airport at some point, but other than that, it's been 3-4 years.
No, I did the cruise.
Oh, okay. Well, that was, gosh. Okay. So a year ago. Seems like forever. Okay,
good. I wanted to do it last year, but I got the shutdown put on me.
It's originally, so tell me about that. Cause you'd signed with WWE.
Look, this is almost when you and I had our little program. This was the gimmick that you had at the time. So this is kind of an homage and a pinch to you.
That was when I got in a beard growing contest with Zach Wilde, but that's a whole other story. But so what happened with the cruise for the second one, the part deux? Originally you wanted to go.
Yeah, and I mean, WWE was very gracious and let me complete all of my indie commitments that I had, you know, agreed to do before I re-signed with them, including being a part of Liger's last match at WrestleCon. Or one of his last matches.
Yeah, his last match in the States or whatever, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, so and it was me, Liger, and X-Pac in the six-man match. So, you know, normally that's WrestleMania weekend, the busiest weekend. The busiest week of the year for us. And they let me do that. But the one thing they kind of put the kibosh on was the Jericho crew. So you're the enemy now.
Yeah, it was. Man, I'll tell you the story. Some of the time how hard it was to get Ric Flair on this year. To the point where I thought I was going to have to rent a helicopter and have him land in the middle of the sea for like 10 minutes and get off because they were not going to let him come. But like you said,
would that be then last year when you had your outfit flown to you.
That's right.
That's a level of swag people just don't understand.
That's why I left my wrestling gear at home. Planning a cruise for, you know, 18 months, and I'd finally go on the cruise and leave my bag at home. I've never left my wrestling gear at home ever, except for the cruise.
Ever? I've only did it one time, and it was in within the last 2 or 3 years. It was for OVW. I'm doing, you know, Al Snow has taken over OVW, so asked me to come in at a friend price. You know how that goes. But I was, you know, happy to do it, you know, because I love Al. I was happy to do it. And I'm working Abyss. Never worked Abyss. Super kind of excited about it. Open up that gear bag, and holy shit, it's not there. Huh. I'm a gimmick. I was like, what? But I had the mask because I keep the mask in my briefcase, in my carry-on, like a handbag. So I had the mask and the makeup. I just didn't have the gear. And so, you know, sometimes desperation leads to some great creativity. So we came up with this idea because Abyss had a bunch of minions with him. I forget what they were called. But Abyss is in the ring waiting for me. And these guys come dragging me out to the back because I did a meet and greet. So people saw me in the street clothes. And they saw me in the street clothes and the mask. And after that meet and greet, I was supposed to be going and getting dressed. Well, then the minions, the business minions come dragging me out through the curtains and I'm all beat up. You know, I try to fight them off in the aisle. You know, they beat me up again, roll me in the ring. I'm dead. Abyss bullies the referee to start the match. 1, 2, I kick out. Biggest pop of the match. Because everybody thought it was done. Then we have a good little – so it was like, you know, like I said, desperation sometimes. You come up with some really good creative shit when you ain't got no other choice.
Yeah, I remember I saw Coco Beware once in Winnipeg. Obviously, all his gear got lost, so no bird. And he wrestled in sweats and dress shoes. And Coco Beware with no bird?
Not much left. I understand getting the gear. Did he always – like, where was the bird?
They must have put the bird on the ring truck or something like that, man. So, dude, it's been a crazy couple weeks for you.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
No, I could just see him going, man, what did I forget? Oh, yeah, where that fucking bird?
But crazy, crazy week for you, the big furlough and all that other stuff. And, you know, like I said, you in WWE as a producer, working as a producer – you're a lot like me, and you have opinions, and you stand up for what you believe in. But there's also a system in WWE that you have to adhere to. How was your experience being a producer? Because you're really good at putting together matches to begin with.
Overall, it was overall mainly positive. You know, there's going to be a little things. I'm not very corporate.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
When I had this conversation, that was my struggle.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't know when to shut up. You know, if I'm right, I'm right. I want to continue. If I believe it in my heart that I'm right, I want to continue this shit until you admit that I'm right. And so that's always been me. But I think it's a part of what led to, you know, the success that I have. I wasn't a pushover, you know. So I had a little bit of corporate struggles, but other than that, I really super enjoyed. I like being an agent. I like being in the creative process. I'm always giving people ideas constantly. I still talk to people in different companies constantly. It's like, hey, why don't you try this? Because they got a lot of people that just reach out to me. So I love that process. And I love seeing people try shit that they didn't think was going to work. Mm. And then it does, because that's when you learn. You know, that's when you really learn some shit. Like, so much that, you know, we were blessed to get to work with some of the greats. And that's really how you learn, you know. Like Pat Patterson was such a great influential agent for me personally. I never really saw a lot of Pat's work coming up, you know. I didn't get to see the WWF or, you know, any of the I guess he was more out of California and that sort of thing. I never got to see any of that. I was only NWA when I was a kid. So
Pat was also 70s too. So that's like even 10 years earlier than us as wrestling fans in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was always an old man. I don't think there's any pictures that exist of Pat being young.
He's like Arn Anderson and Dory Funk Jr. They were old when they were young.
Yeah. Even that famous picture of him winning the Intercontinental title in whatever battle warrior that is, he's 50 years old there. but still a brilliant mind, you know, so a brilliant mind, but But yeah, overall, I really love the process. I really like being a producer, and I want to be involved in pro wrestling till I have nothing to offer. And I mean, I still think I do. So that's the goal, to figure out a way to, you know, stay involved. So
when you go there, because I was never a producer.
Am I doing this alone? What you got over there?
No, hell, I didn't know what you had there, man.
I got that goose.
Yeah, boy.
Actually, Ciroc.
Okay, that's good. Shall we talk about the first time you ever drank? Because you never drank when we first met.
Right. I did not drink. I just told this story on something, too. I forget where. It's amazing how this story kind of made the rounds. But I didn't drink at all. I think I had kind of faked a shot at the premiere of Ready to Rumble.
Uh-huh.
Because it's one of those kind of games like that. But then the only bad part about the story is that it happened on 9/11. That's the only bad part of the story. You know,
yeah. Really,
obviously a terrible day in world history. But there was a big we were on a Tuesday. We were in Houston, Texas. This is the day of 9/11. Everybody's just shocked, you know, in shock. We don't know what's going on. We're stranded. We're all stranded in Houston. No flights going in and out. So, I mean, unless you lived in Texas, you were stuck there. And it was a big toast, long story short, big toast down in a bar that nobody we knew in the immediate family of all the people that were there were affected. And there was a lot of people from New York, a lot of people from that northeastern area were there.
Yeah.
And the company is especially, you know, WWE's based out of that area. So everybody did a big shot. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. That's a good thing to take a shot to. I'm going to do it, you know, because it was a very emotional time.
It was
a very emotional time. I took it. And here comes that diabolical Matt Hardy. I told you. See, everybody thinks Matt's the babyface. No, Matt's a heel. He's a real life heel. His gimmick is babyface. That motherfucker's heel. So he goes around and tells Undertaker that I don't drink. And, it kind of spilling the beans on me. But I don't know. So here comes the Undertaker, slaps me on the back. Hey, kid, take a shot with me. Now, I don't want to take this shot. I didn't want to take the first one, but I did. And he just saw me take another one, so I can't say no. And I don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be that guy, because the locker room back then, they would rib you if they found a weakness.
Yeah, bad. To the point of even getting you out of the company.
Yeah. And so that's why I never told anybody about the twin phobia for years. I didn't tell anybody about the twin phobia until I felt I was real proof. And that's the only time that finally came out.
Well, you thought they would put you with twins or something?
Of course they would. You know, I'd be with twins every day and just having nightmares every night if they did. So anyway, Taker, you know, I say, okay. So here he comes with Jack Daniels or whatever nasty shit he drinks. And I took it. Bam. I'm like, wow, I'm on fire. You know, the temperature's starting to rise a little bit. Now here comes Michael Hayes. Hurricane! Naves, take a shot with me. Damn. Same thing. And so I'm sure you were in on it. Everybody's in on it. Next thing you know, I'm out of my mind, plastered. Mm-hmm. And there was a strip club next door. Me and Matt go there, and I put him in. We get up on the stage where the dancers are, and I put him in the Walls of Jericho on the stage. And that's the last thing I really recall. But I woke up the next day. I don't get hangovers.
Hmm.
I might be a little tired the next day, but that's it. I don't have the headaches. I don't do the vomiting. I just get up and I'm okay.
Because after that, I remember we were in Japan and you were drinking like apple martinis or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So then, okay, I figured out, okay, alcohol wasn't as bad. And like, I kind of like, part of the reason I had avoided it was I had been around mean drunks, you know, during teenage years and younger part of my life. So that's kind of one of the reasons I didn't like to drink. But I figured out alcohol doesn't change who you are. It brings out who you are. So if you're an asshole in real life and you drink, you're probably going to be more of an asshole. Well, I'm kind of a clown all day long. I love to make people laugh. So when I drink, that's just kind of what comes out.
Yeah.
Now, we both know I can get angry sometimes. We know this.
We know this.
So, you know, that does happen on occasion, but the majority of times I'm just a clown laughing, having a good time, which is why we, you know, spent so many times together, you know.
Yeah, we had very similar personalities. And once again, like, you know, drunken, you know, exploits notwithstanding, I don't remember ever really having any, because when you travel with somebody, you know, you're the last guy I ever traveled with before I just started traveling by myself. And we never had any of those disagreements that travel partners have sometimes. Yeah. I don't recall any of them. I think their biggest argument was what comedy album to put on when we bought our comedy tapes.
That you kept putting on that Adam Sandler shit, man. I was
that's done. Hilarious. It's funny. And you, what did you put on? Bill Burr or something like that? Or
no, Bill Burr wasn't even around here. And I had
there was a Bill something, smoked cigarettes.
Damn, what is his name? No. Fuck. See, it's already getting to me. I know I had Pryor. I had Richard Pryor.
So we went to this, Google this, kids, a record store. And because you like whatever fucked up music I like, and I like rock and roll, and you like some rock and roll too, but instead of when you're driving with partners, the musical choice can often cause issues. So we decided to settle down the middle and we'll just listen to comedy albums. And I busted out some of the classics that I listened to when I was a kid, the Robin Williams Live at the Met. And I think we listened to a Cosby one back when Cosby was funny and not rapey. And and then
I hate that we even have to say that.
I know you have to say it though. And then we thought those were pretty funny. And I was like, Adam Sandler, they're all going to laugh at you. And you did not like that one at all. And then you brought some in return that Pryor was great, but there's some other guy that you just thought was brilliant that I thought it was
not. Oh, yeah. He's regarded as one of the most brilliant. I can't believe, because Dennis Leary totally jacked Zach. And somebody in the, maybe it was an homage. I don't know. Sometimes that homage can go overboard. And somebody Google who Dennis Leary copied in comedy. And that's
was it Bill Hicks?
Bill Hicks. Boom.
That's it. Bill Hicks. Scott Cornish on Facebook just got that for us. Bill Hicks. And Sammy Baseline says, Bill Hicks, for fuck's sakes. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Sorry. I apologize. The Sir Rock is getting to me. I'm undefeated against The Rock, but Sir Rock whoops my ass every time. Is that a t-shirt?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So it was Bill Hicks was the guy.
Yeah, we had three apiece. Oh, I had Kinnison too. And right. We both loved Kinnison. So I had Kinnison, Pryor, and Bill Hicks. And I guess you had Cosby, Adam Sandler, and there was a third one. Robin Williams, and we all love him.
And then the other one that we both discovered is, what's the cat's name? We quote him to this day. Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah. I had never heard him, which is amazing because I'm such a big comedy fan. But all of the dumb shit I say, people kept saying, oh, you got that from Hedberg. And I was going, and I kept hearing that name. And I was like, I'm going to figure out who that is. And then MVP went out of his way to buy me a CD. He goes, Hurricane, you got to listen to this guy, man. This is you. And I was listening to him. And I go, motherfucker, maybe this is me. Maybe I did this shit. Like,
he even talks like you, kind of.
Yeah. Very similar kind of. Definitely some of the stupid shit I come up with all the time. But like the weird cadence, you know, kind of nervous. I struggle with anxiety heavily.
What's the best Hedberg joke that you can recall?
The ant farm. Them fellas ain't grow me shit.
How about a carrot for me?
How about a carrot? And I'm not going to tell you what hotel I'm staying in, but there are two trees in the name. I use that one to this day.
The one I like is, I don't like protests, but I don't know how to show it.
Without a doubt.
I went to the donut shop. They asked me if I wanted a receipt. No, thanks. I do not need a receipt for a donut. Never. I do not need to put it in a filing cabinet under D for donut.
He's one of those guys too. Like, he's funny, but other people have to, if you listen to him by yourself, like, you need to listen to him with people.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
The analogy about pro wrestling without crowds. I was like, it's kind of like watching comedy by yourself. Like, if nobody else is in that room, I don't care how funny he is, it's not going to be quite as funny. And he's definitely one of those guys that you need to hear that audience to get it going.
Jake B just wrote this one in. Someone asked me if I wanted a frozen banana. And I said, no, but I do want a banana for later. So yep. The answer is yes.
Yeah, so many.
So we do here on Saturday Special, just winging it. As you've seen, there's a lot of people asking questions. So Aaron Dillinger says, has Hurricane and Jericho ever had a match together? Hmm? But there's one that really stands out to me. Okay. you want to take it?
No, man, go ahead. It's your show.
You're the guest. Tell us what happened. Maritime. Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia. We had a couple good ones. Atlanta was a lot of fun. We had one in Atlanta that was a lot of fun, and we kind of were really rocking and rolling in that one.
I remember a great one in Portland, Oregon. Do you remember this? Portland?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Might have been the first time we were back in Portland as a company in like 20 years or something. And I remember you and I worked together.
Yeah, because we had a couple weekends in a row where it would be the Jericho show, whatever you would do. The highlight reel. And it was something like, I remember the line being, I would say ridiculous. And then I would point at you and go, re-dick, you less. And for whatever reason, I don't even remember what the setup was.
I'll tell you what it was. It's time when I was doing a bit where I'd come to the ring and cut a promo. Because there was one summer where I just did highlight reels for house shows because they wanted something different. Talk about the easiest setup ever. And I was doing a bit. This is so stupid, but where I'd have my fly down. So I'd go up there and cut a promo in the town and cut a promo on you. And then you'd be like, hey, man, you know what? What? Before you say all that stuff, you got to realize something. What? Your fly is down. And, of course, someone's fly being down is the funniest thing in the world. And it's for being a heel. And you do the old, like, the bigger type thing. And that's when you said, you know, you're being ridiculous. And what I really mean is re-dick you less. And I thought that was really funny.
And that's what it says, too. We just came up with that shit ourselves, too.
So we're in the Nova Scotia, though.
What they got to do, always remember about the Portland one, though. We would always end with that segment. I would choke slam you, and I don't know if a referee would slide in or whatever, but it was kind of like not really a match, but it would end with Hurricane Up. That was when we were in Paducah or wherever the hell. But now we go back to Portland, 20,000 people. Hurricane ain't up in this one. And also, I don't know if you remember, but we got out there real quick because we were riding together too. We're breaking the rules, guys. We're riding together and we wanted to get back to the hotel, and I was still in the gimmick. And so I'm still in the mask driving down this damn street. And we go to, I'm not going to tell you what hotel it was, but there were two trees in the name. And we go there, and my key is in my gear bag. And I go to the front and I say, yeah, can I get a key, room so and so, whatever, Shane Helms? And they go, can I see your ID? And I go, I'm wearing a mask. I'm like, I'm not wearing a mask in the ID. And it was definitely a double treat because I got cookies. But anyway, the Nova Scotia story was great because it was it your first time ever there?
I think so, yeah.
First time ever in Nova Scotia. You're the first Canadian on the show. And WWE would do this thing to me all the time when I go to Canada, where they would always make me wrestle a Canadian to a point where it was driving me crazy. I did come through Gorilla one time and go, can I come to Canada and not wrestle a Canadian, please?
Especially when you're supposed to be a babyface, right?
Yeah, I'm supposed to be a babyface. And that was the only reason. I love wrestle Canadians. Don't take it that way, people. But like, and luckily, with the strength of the Hurricane character, they didn't turn on me like they would a lot of other guys. A lot of guys, they would just completely turn on. So they were pro Jericho without a doubt, but at least they didn't hate me. Mm-hmm. But when I say they were pro Jericho, you're out there, you're choking me. You're like breaking my eyes. You're giving me the nut shot, pulling the hair. You did the wrist tape. You did the old school wrist tape, which you might be the only person ever to do wrist tape on me. I don't think you would try everything.
Every heel tactic in the book. Cause I'm like, you know, typical, I'm going to get them. I'm going to get these guys. And I said, I remember something like, no, I'll slap you and you slap me back. Slap you. Yeah. You slap me back. Boo. Yeah. Usually the baby slapping that heel gets the big reaction.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were trying so hard, and the more you cheated, the more they looked. It's Jericho, it's Y2J, it's all this shit. And so I remember the finish was going to be, you put me in the walls, the superhero valiantly makes it to the rope, and I almost get there, and you were going to drag me out to the middle. And we might have even discussed doing it once or twice, because I was going, oh, it's the superhero. The superhero don't just give up. But I was tired of this bullshit. You put me in that damn walls. I was over for a nanosecond and said, and I remember you let me go and you go, good call.
Yeah. We thought we'd get the value, like, no, come on. It's just like, boo.
The second I was in that thing, I tapped out, man. Get me, I'm going home.
So we did have a match. Jerry Hollenbach wants you to discuss your experiences. And some of the fun times you had on Ready to Rumble, the movie that you worked on, starring our mutual friend to this day, David Arquette.
Yeah, I had a lot of blast with that too. I don't even know. Chris Canyon was the one that helped me get that gig. And I was only supposed to help with pre-production, you know, choreograph some of the wrestling scenes. You know, believe it or not, kids, movies aren't real. And so, you know, just for camera angles and storyboarding and stuff like that, we were going to, you know, Van Hammer does this. Perry Saturn does this. We had a crazy ass cast of characters anyway. So, but then they figured out that they needed a stunt double for David Arquette. And so I just happened to, you know, similar build, ended up getting that gig. So it went from being like 3 weeks to 3 months. I ended up being out in LA for the deal, but I had a lot of fun. My favorite story though, is I helped train Dennis Rodman for one of his pay-per-view matches.
Oh, wow.
And so here's the scenario. It's me, Chris Canyon, Dennis Rodman, and Randy Savage in a wrestling ring in LA in some warehouse. And I'm just sitting there going, I don't even know how this shit happened. Like I literally compare myself to Forrest Gump. I just stumble into shit all the time. I'm going to win the lottery one day on a ticket that I found, not that I bought. That's just how kind of shit works for me. And so, but I'm teaching Rodman all this stuff. You know, I had him standing on the top rope coming off with a clothesline, which was, when you see his, however, 6'8", 6'9", tall as his.
Yeah, ass. At least.
And if you haven't seen The Last Dance, that's amazing. If you haven't watched that.
That's the Michael Jordan thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I gotta watch that.
That was my team. That's my favorite dynasty.
So Rodman was part of that team.
Yeah. So that's where that came from. Sorry. So I'm teaching him a couple other things. And it was a really big moment for me because I never worked for Savage. And Savage is one of my guys coming up. Like him and Flair are the two I watched and studied. And if I wanted to be any two human beings on this planet, it was either Ric Flair or Randy Savage. Mm-hmm. They were just my dudes. So now I'm working with Rodman and I'm showing him some stuff and then explaining it to him. And Savage goes, "You're a hell of a worker, brother." And boy, I was just like, that's my guy. You know, just getting that, you know what it is. Somebody you look up to gives you that little thumbs up. You know, that meant a lot to me.
Big time.
The best part was we're going to teach Rodman how to hit him with a chair. And for those of you listening, ain't really a damn secret. You just hit them. There's no company that makes rubber chairs. And so Rodman was kind of like, "Oh, you just this chair?" He was kind of like blown back by that. Like, so just y'all don't have special chairs? Like, nah, man, just hit him with this side, you know, not the side with the edges, kind of hit him with this side, and that's all it is. And if you remember, this is Savage from Spider-Man. This is Bonesaw Savage. He is yoked the fuck. Yeah. Yo, not quite as big as you are right now. He won't that level, right?
But I'm sitting really close to the camera, that's why.
But he was fucking huge. So he does this big lat spread, right? He goes, "Yeah, brother, come on, brother, back here." And so Rodman hit him. And when I tell you Rodman swung that shit, son, it was like Barry Bonds. And it was boom! And I was like, "God damn!" I was like this. And Savage goes, "Yeah, brother, just like that." And then he walked away. And he got out of the ring and went around the corner. And we just watched him leave. And I don't know what happened to him or what he did. But in my mind, he walked around that corner and goes, "God damn!" But then he came back a little bit later. We actually got fucked up in that, too. In the beginning of the movie, there's a scene where they're in a convenience store. The scene where David Arquette, like, puts his finger up his ass and gives the guy the drink like that. In the convenience store. And then he has some dream sequence where a wrestling ring materializes in the dream in the store, where we were doing some kind of gimmick where I was going to do a springboard on one rope and Savage was hitting the rope on the other side, if you understand. Mm-hmm. So he's hitting the rope on one side, I'm doing a springboard on the other, and the top rope breaks. So Savage falls out on his head. Now, it wasn't as tall as the regular wrestling ring was, because I'm saying it was this makeshift ring, but he fell out, boom. And I guess he kind of got banged up. Now, it fell when I was in the air. So I'm up with that springboard. That's when the rope breaks. So I come crashing down on my side on that fucking steel cable rope. So boom, I flip over, land on my shit. But I'm just a stunt guy. This ain't Sugar Shane. This is just a stunt guy that they don't give a fuck about. So Savage lands on his head. Everybody rushes over there to him. I'm over there on fire and nobody gave a fuck. There was one person to check on me, but I had a lot of fun, man. It was crazy.
There's lots of cool stuff to talk about. Like I said, lots of really cool questions. But the one question that people bring up, and you mentioned this earlier, actually, Jamie Pearson has this question from Facebook. You mentioned that you've never lost to The Rock.
Did I mention that?
You mentioned that, yeah. Oh. I think there's a tattoo of it on your other arm. But this is a great story, and I love this because you were in WWE for a while. They called you Hurricane because you had the Green Lantern tattoo. We all know this. But basically doing nothing. And this is how WWE works. The next week or next 2 weeks, now you're working with The Rock and Stone Cold and Triple H. Tell us how kind of that went on so people understand just how crazy WWE can be sometimes.
Yeah, like, you know, when I came in, so the first, I think I won like the Europe. I had the worst debut of all time. The exact opposite of your debut.
What was your debut?
This is a good dynamic we got here. You had one of the best debuts in WWE history. I had one of the fucking worst.
What was it?
So, because I was Sugar Shane on some house shows because I was the Cruiserweight champion. I was Sugar Shane on some house shows, WWE house shows, and it was like Triple Threats or some shit like that with me, Chavo, Kidman, whatever. I feel like Tajiri and X-Pac were sprinkled in here and there, that sort of thing. And so the story was, well, what was supposed to happen was I was going to be established against Chavo to establish to the WWE audience, a lot who didn't watch WCW and didn't know who the fuck we were, but I would be established as the Cruiserweight champion. And I was going to eventually drop the title to Billy Kidman in Atlanta because Billy Kidman at that time was a much bigger star than Sugar Shane Helms was. And whether I liked that or not, I couldn't argue with that. That was just that was that
it's true. Yeah, at the time. Yeah.
And so, yeah, at the time. Thank you. I appreciate that. But Booker T and Bagwell had a match on Monday Night Raw. That was the first WCW match on WWF TV that did not go the way they wanted.
Yeah, it was terrible.
And everybody knows the story behind that. We don't got to get into it, but it wasn't Booker's fault. That's all I'm going to say. Now they look at the locker room and they decide that, and this was a compliment. They look at the locker room and they decided that of the guys that they have, me and Billy Kidman could have the best match. But they gotta erase the stink of that first match, which actually I watched it back. It's been kind of blown out of proportion how awful it was. It wasn't the worst match of all time. It was
a terrible way to put your first foot forward.
Yeah. It just wasn't.
Yeah.
A good first impression.
And I always say, had they put our old buddy LTS, Lance T. Storm, in there instead of Bagwell, there might still be a WCW to this day. Because, you know, they would have had a great match, Booker and Lance.
So you're saying it's Lance's fault that WCW is not around. I might have to agree with you.
Using the transitive property, it is definitely Lance's fault that the WCW is not
around. Hacksaw Brook Reed, love him.
So it's Kidman versus Hurricane.
So now I'm not going to be introduced against Chavo. Now I'm going to debut against Kidman and lose the title on my first night. And that day is when they come to me and finally tell me I can't be Shane.
And why is that?
Shane McMahon.
Only one Shane, pal.
Only one Shane. I remember too, like at one point when I wanted to just to fast forward, just because I'm saying this to you, fast forward real quick. When I did the heel turn to Gregory Helms, I was like, well, can I do Shane now? Because Shane McMahon kind of wasn't around. I was like, you got Chris Jericho, you got Chris Benoit, you got Christian. And Brian Gerwitz go, well, we ain't got a Chris McMahon. Say no more. And I walk the fuck away. But so that day, backtracking to the Billy Kidman match, they come to me to tell me I can't be Shane, can't be Sugar. Because Sugar Shane was the deal. I'm definitely not going to have the girls because I had the girls' entrance with me in WCW. And I hadn't got the no on that yet. And I was hoping that I had that because that entrance was cool as fuck. So I can't do the Vertebreaker. And so the Vertebreaker isn't going to be my music. And I'm going to lose the title. So I lost my name, my gimmick, my title, my finishing move. And I was just going,
your girl.
So I was like, oh, shit. And Stephanie was like, I know. Stephanie was actually so super cool and supportive. She's like, listen, I know this sounds bad. Because as they're kind of telling me, and I'm sitting there going, so I can't do this either? And I can't do this? And I can't do this? And it's just a whole list of shit I can't do anymore. And I'm going, And two, the Bagwell thing, me and Bagwell had had that incident. Mm-hmm. And so I'm at this point going,
a backstage fight, so you don't want to really, you don't want to push it at this point.
Yeah, and I'm thinking maybe they're getting a title off of me and my ass might be gone. Mm-hmm. You know, even though they assured me, you know, you stood up for yourself, you did nothing wrong, I'm still going, oh, I still might get, he can get the fuck out of here. Because there's 90 guys out there trying to be on this television show right now.
Right.
So they don't, you know, not like they're looking for guys. And so I was, but Stephanie was like, don't worry about it. We like you. We like your talent. You're going to be fine. We just got to get through this. And so that was the worst debut of all time.
But how did it lead to you having one of the monumental moments with Rock and Austin? Okay. Guys?
So then, you know, whatever, the hurricane thing starts to happen. And, you know, that started with Steve Austin because I was Hurricane Helms. Well, I looked exactly like Sugar Shane, but Hurricane Helms, which was my name. And I just found the list of names. Because that night, they wanted me to be Hollywood Helms, and I didn't want to be Hollywood Helms.
Really?
Yeah.
Hollywood Helms, okay.
I mean, when you hear me, I guess because of the movie, and I had the, like, that shiny-ass robe, I guess, you know. But Hogan had just been Hollywood Hogan. Like, to me, that would have been a fucking kiss of death for me to go out there and be, and follow in the damn very enormous boots of Hollywood Hogan. That was just, I didn't want to do that. And it's still, to this day, on like the YouTube versions of that match, it says Hollywood on my Titantron.
Oh, wow. No kidding.
Yeah. But so that night we got a red eye back home, me and Matt Hardy. And I'm sitting there writing down every name I'd ever come up with, every name I'd ever decided to use, whatever. And I was Shane Hurricane Helms on the Indies for a very small amount of time. And so I went back to them with Hurricane Helms and Vince like this. So that's how that name. And then I'm the Hurricane. And I had some good moments. I was a European champion for a little while. Me and Lance had a good run as a tag team where they were going to make us WCW champions, but then they decided not to. So, you know, whatever. Good moments. Well, at least I was in the discussion. Sometimes you don't know how far those discussions actually make it. Sometimes they make it events. Sometimes they don't. Who knows? But me and Lance had a really good thing going. But it was hot. It was hit or miss. And my merch was doing good and everything was doing good. I think I was like one of the first cruiserweights that was legit. You know, like got like 200 pounds to start doing good merch, you know, because right, you were right. Big. I don't think you were, to me, you were never a cruiserweight. You were motherfucking, you were a big guy to me. But,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, even when I was a cruiserweight in WCW, I still weighed 220 pounds.
Yeah, yeah, you're
it was the style of wrestling more than a weight class in WCW, yeah. Whereas in WWE, they actually went for the weight class rule. That's what Vince wanted.
Yeah. So yeah. I was probably 190 pounds, and I'm pushing good merch, and I'm pretty sure I'm the first guy to ever push merch for him at that weight. Until Ray came along and just blew us all out of the fucking water. But I'm just going good. And, you know, Brian Gerwitz liked that. Brian was really helpful with me because Brian liked comics and he understood comedy and him and Brock were really close. And so it was only going to be one segment in Toronto with me and Brock. That's all it was on paper scheduled to be. And it just went well. Like things happen in the business. Sometimes the best shit is shit that just organically happens. We just had good chemistry. Same way with me and you doing the highlight reel. It's just like, hey, you say this, I'll say this. And then when it got live, we actually ended up saying completely different shit because it popped in our head, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know,
is that when Rock kind of, he opened his locker and you were hiding inside or something like that?
That wasn't the first one. The first one was the one where he called me the Hamburglar. And then, which was huge for Pop, and it was everything I could not do to damn laugh like that. And then I told him that Brandon Fraser beat the Scorpion King, and he had the big sale to that. And we had a really, and like even that night, Kevin Dunn saw me in the hallway somehow and put it over. Kevin Dunn don't put over shit.
Right.
I still remember him putting that over. And so it led to the locker room one. And I was just going to fly in like always, because I always flew into the scene. And that locker was over there. And that was my idea. And I was like, what if I was in that locker the whole time? And so Rocky was like, oh, that'd be great. And Brian liked it. And Brian was pretty easy to work with anyway. And two, another line there, when Rock put out his phone and said, it's nothing. He says he knows you. I gave him that. Because he was going to say I was 5 foot nothing, 100 pounds of nothing or whatever. And I was just like, hey, you got your phone? And I said, say it's nothing. He knows you. And he liked that I gave him that zinger. You know, I mean, dude, I'm not stupid. I know who's getting the rub here. You know, mm-hmm. It was him. No, it was definitely me getting the fucking rub. So however funny this thing can be, I was all on board. And I just think he appreciated that. And we just, I don't know, good chemistry. And I wish it could have been longer and stuff like that. But we had a really fun little short mini feud, I guess.
Well, didn't you actually beat The Rock? That's why you say you're undefeated with him. You had a match and you won.
So we had after that first night, that first night in Toronto, I've always had a good relationship with fans of Toronto. For whatever reason, I mean, you probably know, there's just certain cities for you, Nova Scotia, that they just love all your shit. And so Toronto's been cities that's always been good to me. And so after that first segment with The Rock, that backstage segment we did, there's a battle royal that night. And The Rock's in there laying the smack down on people doing this and that. And he comes to get me and I block it. And I start fighting back and you could just feel it in the crowd. You could just, oh shit. And you know, I might be glorifying it a little bit in my mind, who knows, but I know I felt something and I was happy about it. Then he tossed my ass out. But like, when after it's over, you know, you're just hoping, man, I hope the office heard that, you know, I hope creative saw that and they saw that there was something, but you never know. They might have said, fuck it, that was it. You know, he got a little rubbed the hell with it. But they liked it and it led to, you know, another promo and whatever. And so now I'm doing media day because we got TV in Cleveland. Monday Night Raw is going to be in Cleveland, Ohio. And I got a media weekend, like a Saturday and Sunday, where I got to do a bunch of media to push ticket sales. And I remember it because I always keep my phone with me. I'm one of those guys that's always in my hand, in my pocket. But at the hotel, I had just left my room briefly to go like get something from the vending machine. Come back and I missed a call. Unknown caller, of course. Check the voicemail and it's Rock. And he's telling me the main event, Monday Night Raw, is going to be me versus him. I'm going over, you know, whatever, a couple segments, you know, have you bumping boots on, kid. You know, I'll be ready, something like that. And I was just like, what? What the fuck? You know, what? I mean, keep in mind, after the WCW invasion, it wasn't like the WCW guys were treated all that well. Be honest, you know, we weren't. And I'm sitting there going, I'm about to beat The Rock? And there was a moment where I didn't think it was him. I thought it was, you remember Jason Sensation? I told you the story. I thought it was him. I thought
could imitate all the guys.
Yeah, he did great. Somebody did an impersonation and this is a rib. So I didn't tell nobody. I didn't tell Matt. I didn't tell my girlfriend. I didn't say shit. When I go to Monday Night Raw, I don't even say nothing to nobody because I'm waiting for somebody to say, oh yeah, it's you and Stevie Richards on Heat tonight. That's what I'm thinking it's going to be. This is a joke. I'm hoping beyond hope, and I got 97 spots in my mind, but I'm not selling it. And then I see Rocky, and he's like, you ready? And I was like, and I'm trying to no sell him. I'm like, yeah, man, yeah. And it was great, man. But it was weird because I look at it now, and you got all of them agents back there and all these guys trying to help people out and do stuff. I ain't have shit.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, whoever the agent was just kind of there, but I'm just talking about, man, it was just me and him. And I just remember so much pressure because if this match goes terrible, he's still The Rock. That shit ain't going to change. He's still going to be at WrestleMania with Steve Austin. If that shit goes terrible, I'm done.
Hey, yeah. You're done at the top for sure. Yeah.
If I go out there and stink it up with the fucking Rock, I'm done. He has no pressure. I got all of it on me. But luckily it went well. We had a really good time.
I don't remember exactly what the finish was, but you tell me. At the end of the match, you get the win. But there was some big angle to lead to this finish.
Yeah. So he hits me with the pine buster, as he calls it.
Pat calls it, right?
He hits me with the pine buster. And he's going for the elbow, boom. As soon as he crosses over, Austin's music hits. So he's distracted by the music. And when he's distracted, I hit him with the greatest finisher in all of pro wrestling, the schoolboy for the 1-2-3. And they wanted me to kind of scurry out of there. And you see me going up the ramp like this, like a little idiot. And I did what I was told. But that was one of those times where I should have been selfish. And got my moment a little bit more, but I wasn't. I hate it, but I was just so happy to be there. I didn't want to step on nobody's toes.
Once again, though, it's typical wrestling. I should have been selfish after I beat The Rock.
Yeah.
Right? The best part was because I know you've talked about this before. When you beat The Rock, 1-2-3, and they instantly go to Steve or Hunter. Steve The Rock. Yeah. And all you see in the background, like a little guy, is Hurricane running up the rampway like this.
Yeah. You see this guy.
Like in the back.
Yeah. And you can kind of see, I kind of almost bump into Steve, and there's, he kind of does that, and he knew.
Mm-hmm.
I should have did something with him. So when I say selfish, I don't mean selfish in a bad way. I should have just took more of command of that situation, because they put me in that spot for a reason, you know, and I did just, we did just hit a home run there. So I wouldn't have taken anything away from them two, but I should have just did something with Steve, just this, whatever, something with some stupid thing there, just to have that little bit and then go.
Stand the ring a little longer or whatever it may be. Jordan Booth on Facebook, I almost cracked it. Jordan Booth on Facebook says, Hurricane, are you back at 100%? Are you able and do you want to wrestle?
I definitely want to wrestle, because I never retired. I never uttered the R word. Mm-hmm. So I didn't. And when I was, you know, finishing out my indie dates, I had so many, because I was so super busy when I signed with WWE. You know, I mean, I was doing everything in the last couple of years. You know, just if there was any kind of big indie show, I was on that damn thing, whether it was House of Hardcore with Tommy, it was Ring of Honor. I had that good program with Marty Scurll. I would just did some stuff with Era Lucha, which was a good little company. I was just really super busy. And I was all, and I loved that. I loved the hustle of it all. And just going and being able to do whatever I want and work with different people and all of that. And so it was only like a couple weeks before my last match that I even realized that was my last match on the books. And I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to hang it up, you know. And so, and I'm still not. And then because I'm with WWE, you know, every Monday I got to see this wrestling ring that I want to be in. And now I can't. And it's like a drug addict that's just looking at a bunch of drugs every Monday, every Sunday, every SmackDown. I'm just going, damn it, I want to be out there. So when the COVID thing first started, and I started paying attention to it pretty early. I'm an information junkie. You know, you see me on Twitter all the time. I'm the most overactive.
You're also very smart. Smart, which is probably a detriment to you sometimes, because you know your shit. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It actually hurt me in my last job.
You're an information junkie when you were you learned about the COVID very early.
Yeah. So, and I started to figure out too, when I'm staying at home, Vince ain't going to pay me to sit at home forever. You know, this year. So I was, you know, talking to Karen. I was like, I need to go ahead and start getting back in spandex shape, you know, just in case. So I kind of had that in my mind. So I'm at 220 right now. So I'd rather be around 210, 205. And that won't be too difficult, but.
So what led you taking the gig as an agent? Because like you said, you're still wrestling a lot and you're on the independent scene. You're a big name because you have this character and you have this gimmick. And another question is, how are you allowed to keep it outside of the WWE? Because they usually don't allow that. So that's a twofold question. How are you able to keep the gimmick?
They know better than to fuck with me.
What's that?
They know better than to fuck with me.
Hey, man. Hey.
No, I just did it. I just did. I did it forever. And two, they owned the Hurricane. I was Hurricane Helms on the Indies. I own Hurricane Helms. They own the Hurricane.
Gotcha. So that's the difference there.
And two, I never used the logo that they had. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you noticed the 3-count shirt, by the way.
I see that. Available now at prowrestlingtees.com.
And so, where'd you go?
I had to plug in this thing. Keep going. Sorry.
And so instead of the logo, the H logo that you can see right here, shout out to Lash LaRue, who drew this.
Wow.
Yeah, Lash LaRue is actually a fantastic artist, by the way. And so I never used the Hurricane logo in WWE. I created a new mask logo. So the outfit was very similar, but I created my own logo. Gotcha. And I was just careful about it. And I didn't do anything to piss WWE off, you know. I didn't burn their bridges, and I had a good relationship with them. So that's how I was able to do that.
What led to you coming on as an agent, as a producer?
So I ended up doing a couple of guest spots as a coach down at the Performance Center. And they brought me back quickly. And like, I remember all the guys down there going, man, they don't usually bring the guest coaches back that fast. So I think that was a good sign, you know. And two, I was, so that was 2000 and, 18 at the end of 2018. So I was 44, 43, whatever. So I'm loving wrestling. I still love it, but I also see that I can't do that shit forever. Mm-hmm. You know, you're an anomaly. Most guys, you know, and especially because I had my first match at 16. Mm-hmm. You know, I started bumping at 13. So when you're 44, you've been doing that shit for 30 years. It does take its toll. So I wasn't ready to quit. My mind wasn't. My body has wanted to quit for like at least 10.
You know, so. Right.
The guest coaching thing went really well. And I was talking to Matt Bloom, and you know, would you like to come on full time? And I was like, yeah, you know, because honestly, because I'd already been a producer in TNA, and you know, I thought I did really well there. And everybody I worked with seemed to like what I was doing as a producer there. And so I was talking to Matt, and I was like, yeah, I wanted to be a producer, but the process was that you kind of be a coach first. And I was like, okay, mm-hmm. You know, so I'm kind of wrestling with that idea there, because then I would have to move to Orlando. And nothing against Orlando, but my setup in North Carolina is nice. So it wasn't going to be something where I could sell my home. That wasn't
you live in the woods, man.
Yeah. I mean, the family farm is almost like 120 acres. So you don't give that up to go live in a damn townhouse in Orlando. You just don't, you know.
At so, first, I thought you were joking about the family farm, but now I realize you're serious. You really do live in the woods.
Yeah, it's not like in the woods. I mean, there's people around, but it is a rural, you know, farming community.
It's a big place. Gotcha.
Yeah. So, and so I'm sitting there struggling with that because I don't know. I don't want to move. You know, am I going to have to go spend 2 weeks there, 2 weeks back? I'm talking to Karen about it. We would have made it work somehow, you know, but that was the part I was struggling with the most. And then I get, you know, and I always got to thank Ring of Honor because I was still working with them while I was doing that. And they were just super cool. You know, hey, man, do your thing, man. They were just very appreciative of everything I was doing with them. So, you know, just such a professional company to take care of me like they did. And so then I get a call. I was in a movie theater, by the way. Yeah, not by the way, just saying. And I get a call, and it's Mark Carano. He's like, hey, I got Triple H on the phone. You know, you got a few minutes. I'm like, yeah, sure. And so then Hunter presents, goes, hey, we want to bring you in as a producer, but it would be on the main roster. So I would have to move to Orlando. And the pay was going to be more than what I would have got down there anyway. So I'm like, okay, I don't have to move and I get better pay. I'm like, shit. Oh, you could have done this in a text. You know, so, yeah, you could have just texted me that shit.
MySpace me with that shit.
Old school. Geocities. And so, yeah, so that became the deal. And, you know, we'll try it out for a couple months and see if it works. And so, like I said, that whole time I was doing indie shows and all of that. And, you know, I was developing a good rapport with everybody. And then they offered me the full-time deal.
So when you're a producer for WWE, Shane, I mean, obviously, you know it from both sides of the coin. And I don't. I honestly, other than what some of my best friends like Dean has told me or whatever, let me rephrase this. Because we know what it's like to work with a producer and we're working together. When you are the producer, how much are you getting from Vince from input to what he wants? Are you having to throw darts at a board and guessing? And are you getting in trouble, yelled at if it doesn't go the way that he might have wanted it to go, even though you explained it to the people in the ring?
Yeah, you definitely become a buffer. Sometimes it's just some unnecessary horseshit. And you know, you'll get yelled out for something. And then when the talent comes through the curtain, it's like, hey, good job.
Wait. Really? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he never really yelled at me too much. I wasn't one of those guys, you know, and the meetings would be weird. I didn't, you know, you would have these meetings and it's a very strange dynamic, you know, because just tell me what you want. Tell me what you want out of the segment. And I can go make it happen, you know. But there will be a lot of discussion. This person says this one says this one about that. And then you got to go to the talent. And then if the talent don't like it, you know, they don't want to go to Vince. They want you to go to Vince. You know, and half the time I'm like, why don't you go tell them? Well, you go tell them you don't like this shit. Why you want me to do it? Because I never did that. You know, if I didn't like something,
you would go to Vince.
I would go to Vince. Yeah, I would have my agent.
I would never want my agent to do it because I think the agent's just going to fall back and, hey, oh, sorry, Vince doesn't like it. Like, did you even explain it? Let me go see him, you know?
Yeah. You know, so there's a lot about the job that is just really tricky, you know, and And I mean, and that might be just be the job, you know. So sometimes you just got to take it a little bit. I'm not really a guy that's known for eating shit. So that's the part I struggle with, because sometimes I wanted to tell these, you know, whoever the guy was, like, hey, man, why don't you just go do the fucking job? You know, just fucking do it. You know, and it'd be good ideas. But it seems like a lot of today's talent, and not all of them, because there are a lot of guys that were super easy to work out. Like, hell yeah, I got you, man. Boom. You know, Cesaro, no matter what you give him, he's going to go out there and kill it. A lot of guys, you know. But there are some guys, they're just in the habit of complaining. It's like they're human Twitter machines. They've complained so much that they're expecting the worst, and they start complaining right away. And then I would have to explain to them why this is actually a good idea. No, this is actually good, man. You don't, you know. And sometimes it's not going to be the best. You know, sometimes, I mean, it's a 3-hour TV show. Yeah. You cannot be highlighted every single person on a 3-hour show. There's some people that got to get fucked up. You know, that's how this business is. Some people get their ass whooped, you know. Tonight is you. You know, I don't know what you want me to say. I did not write this shit. I'm explaining to you what they want. Let's go out there and figure out the best way to do it.
Exactly.
I'm a guy that I won't, even if you're going to do the job, I do want to figure out a way to highlight you a little bit while we're doing it. Unless it's just a total squash, I do like highlighting a guy. You know, I feel, you know, the old saying, one guy goes over, one guy gets over. I lean toward that unless it needs to be just a dominant win. So, you know, it's a journey for some guys, and, you know, and it's a learning process. It's a weird thing, because the weirdest thing to me, and I didn't know how to word this forever, but it was something that I saw, you know, when I was there and we were there at, you know, the same time. Say we would do Monday Night Raw. Well, Tuesday on SmackDown in catering, we would have tapes and we'd watch our matches with a veteran or an agent. That shit don't exist no more.
That's weird that you're right about that.
And it just seems that when they get to that certain level, when they get to the WWE, none of them want to practice anymore. None of them want to get better. They think they make it. They don't go work out anymore. They don't train anymore. They don't do any of that. Now, it's a little different when you're doing house shows every week, because that's kind of part of the training. That helps you get better. But if you're not good while you're doing those house shows, you know, there's still guys, and I see this on every TV show, every wrestling show, there's still guys that can't throw punches. That shit boggles me. How do you not throw a punch? Mm-hmm. You know, in the NBA, you think you get to the NBA and you ain't got to practice no more? That's when you practice more than ever.
Right.
NFL, baseball, you think they don't have batting practice in baseball? But the weird thing is, in pro wrestling, when they get to that TV level, they stop working out. They stop training. And like, guys would come through the curtain, and there were certain guys, because I'm a guy, I want to tell you, you got to be, nobody wants to come through the curtain and just hear what they did wrong. You know, you don't want to hear that. Yeah. But at the same time, a pat on the ass ain't going to make you no better. Me telling you, you did great when you didn't, that ain't going to make you no better. And when it's fresh on my mind, that's when I want to have that conversation. Because that's how I learn. Tell me what I did bad. Don't tell me what I did good. I heard the crowd. I know what they like.
Yeah.
You know, I know what they, and I know generally if the match was good or bad. You know, I want you to analyze and tell me what I could do better. And that's what's missing, because nobody's doing it. Nobody's going, hey, kid, I know you're the world champion and you were great, but them kicks tonight look like dog shit. Nobody's doing that. And that's the part that I think just the mechanics of the business have really gone down, because we only got very few just what I consider perfect mechanics that they are flawless out there. And everybody should be getting better. You should come through that curtain and not, hey, did you like my damn drop kick? Did you like my moonsault? Did you like whatever? How can I be better? That should be what everybody says when they come through. And if it's not then it's the next day. All right, say we do Monday Night Raw, take Tuesday off. Wednesday, there should be a phone call. Hey, let's talk about what happened on Monday.
I agree with you with that, because when you come through the curtain sometimes, and you know this, you're in a great mood. You don't need someone going, hey, that punch was a shit. Yeah. Come on, dude. Give me 3 seconds. And if you're in a shitty mood and someone says that, that's when confrontations start. I think that's a great idea. Give it a day or two and call whatever. Have your agents call. If you're the agent on Monday, on Wednesday at 4 o'clock, you have a 5-minute call. Dude, I love this, this, and this. That could be better. Thank you so much, Shane. I appreciate it. I'll do better. I think that's a good idea, man.
That's what I wanted to do. And then that was one of the ideas I wanted to implement, because they wanted us to start doing like seminars and TV and stuff like that. Not a terrible idea, but I think if you get a group of them together, it's just going to create this us versus them attitude. And that shouldn't be the case, because The Last Dance is a perfect example. You see Michael Jordan over there. There's people working with him that, you know, they don't make his money, but he's working with him. He's listening to him. Because
he's respect.
The best player in the game wants to get better.
Because a true professional always wants to get better. I always used to say wrestling's the only sport business where if I work with Hurricane Helms and you throw, I'm not going to say it because you're here. If I'm working with Joe Schwartz and Joe Schwartz throws really shitty punches, everyone will laugh about Joe Schwartz's punches behind his back.
Mm-hmm.
The office, the refs, the agents, the boys. The only person who doesn't know that Joe Schwartz has bad punches.
Joe Schwartz.
Is Joe Schwartz. Yeah. Why would you want that? Like, we want Joe's great. Joe's got a lot of potential. Let's tell him how to throw a punch. Who throws a punch here? Hurricane, go work with him on his punches every day in the 9 hours we sit around doing nothing before TV.
Don't
you know
sure.
what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. So that was something when TNA, when I agreed to do that, when the TNA first offered me a producer position, I said no. I said, I don't know if I'm going to like this. They offered me a deal the very next day. I came down for one night. The very next day, they offered me a producer job. And I said, let me try this for a couple weeks before I even, because I might not like it, but I fell in love with it. And talking to John Gaborik, I said, I was trying to implement something. I said, I want to be an editor. And I use Stephen King. You're a big Stephen King. Oh, yeah, too. Props on doing the thing with Joe.
Thank you. Top 10 Stephen King books available on Talk Is Jericho now.
But I got to throw Desperation out there. How Desperation in that top 10 makes me.
That's yours. I read it. Didn't care for it as much as you. So that's
good. He said the same thing. Now y'all making me second guess. But I use Stephen King as an example because he's one of the most prolific authors of our time. Maybe the most prolific. Mm-hmm. But he still has an editor. He still has somebody to go, hey, you missed some comments here. You missed some here. You know, just because you're the best doesn't mean you're flawless. And I was like, I want to be the guy that goes, hey, this is what we need to work on. This is what we need to get better, you know, because you're going to have, there's a ton of agents, and I've seen this in my career. I didn't want to be that agent that tells you it's great and you're not getting any better, because the business, that doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help the talents, doesn't help the producer, doesn't help the product. You know,
you never have a perfect match. There's always something that can be better.
Yeah.
But like you said, you might not want to hear that after you walk out of the ring, but couple days later,
come up with the idea of, okay, let's do it on the Wednesday, because I was on Monday Night Raw. So that was going to be my thing. I want to have a conversation with whoever was in my segment. And if you want to, I'll have a conversation with the whole fucking show. I'll spend all day Wednesday calling them all. Let's watch it together and see. And some of the conversations are going to be small. Some of them, hey, no problem. I thought you did great. There are those segments. There are those matches. Hey.
And that's great to hear, too. Hey, by the way, dude, this week, everything that I saw, I thought was great. Congratulations. Yeah. Keep up the good work. We'll see you next week. 30 seconds of that equates to 30 years of loyalty and confidence, you know?
It would help so many guys. So that's what I wanted to do. So if they need that at AEW, I'm just saying.
last few things, dude. I mean, I could talk to you for hours, but was there, I know for example, because Lance was also furloughed or whatever the word is, and he said there was a couple things that I really take great pride in. In your time as a producer in WWE, which was 6 months, 8 months, I can't remember how long it was, a year or whatever, was there a couple things that stand out to where the influence of Shane Helms paid off and deep down inside you're thinking, fucking, I did it, man. I'm so proud of these guys or girls.
There was a couple of different things. I know one of the elimination chambers I came up with a cool, because they wanted Jeff to do some crazy ass dive, because they always want Jeff Hardy to do a crazy ass dive.
He has to, yeah.
So I came up with that spot where I think it was Daniel Bryan laying on the top turnbuckle, and Jeff climbed up to the pod and did the swanton off the pod onto Bryan while he was laying on the top turnbuckle.
Oh, yeah.
So you come up with little things like that. I helped with the Survivor Series. This past year, which was a triple threat. So the whole match was a triple threat the whole time because it's three teams and really difficult to put together. We stole the fucking show. That shit was great. So I definitely had some moments. You know, I came up with Asuka using the mist. I mean, they were the Kabuki Warriors. I don't know how nobody thought of that before me.
That's right. Good point.
Yeah, it's right there, you know. But I'll tell you that this is a really funny story. So I get that match, and it's going to be their first night. They're going to be the heels. They've never been heels before. And it might have been when they won the titles. I believe they did from Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. And so they want me to come up with something heelish for them to do, and I go, okay. And in the meeting, I said, well, just give me a few minutes, you know. And so I thought about it, and then I just had this weird moment, because you know how PC everything is these days. I go, is it wrong that I think they can do the mist just because of the Japanese? I didn't want to assume, but I was like, Kabuki, I have to ask him. He's in the name Kabuki. I got to go ask him. Google Kabuki, kids, and you'll get that joke. So I go to Asuka and I go, you ever did the mist? And she goes, oh, yeah. And I go, shit, yeah. So I'm excited. Okay, she can do it. So now I got to go pitch it to Vince, the mist and all of that. And I tell him, it's like, no, you know, I got a way that the referee won't see it. I think it was Nikki. I'm going to have her roll out of the ring as soon as it happens. So the cameraman will catch her, but the referee would never see her with all that green shit on the face. And later on, that became a problem because they would keep doing that. And you see this person. And in a meeting, I mentioned to him one time, I was like, why are we not covering that up? I was like, if I see somebody drenched in fucking blood and I see somebody holding a knife, I can figure out what happened. You know? And that was exactly what I said. And that's one of the reasons I get in trouble, because I say shit like that. But I was 100% right. But so anyway, back to this doing the mist. So I got to figure out, I don't want to give the secret away. This is a tough one. You know.
You don't have to give away the secret. There's a way that the mist has to be implemented. Which may involve some Kabuki sleight of hand.
With that, and just what it's comprised of and what it goes in.
Or the actual consistency of the mist.
The consistency and the device.
Oh, okay. I don't even know. I would assume, and you don't have to say it. I don't want you to say it. I would assume it's a pill, like a capsule that you crunch and spit. I've never spit mist. What the hell do I know, man? So I don't even know this secret.
Okay, I can't give this. I'm about to tell you this off the air.
Tell me offline.
Yeah. It's my favorite story, but I have to go and have this conversation with Asuka that would be a PR nightmare if you didn't understand what we were talking about. But I was really happy with that. I was really happy with how that worked out. And then of course, they liked it because they started doing it, but then like on TV a couple weeks later, they do it, and you see whoever's just got green shit all over them, and the referee's raising Asuka's arm, and she's got green shit dripping down her face, and I'm going, that gives it away. Yeah. And then, believe it or not, there's this conversation where somebody goes, well, is the mist a disqualification? Yeah. That's the whole fucking reason we do it. Why would we do it if it wasn't a disqualification?
It wasn't cheating.
Yeah. And it was, I literally about pulled my fucking eyeballs out. And it was just one of those days where I'm going, and two, like, none of the agents, and I understand, they don't want to get involved in these conversations. They don't want that heat. So nobody's helping me. And I'm just going, am I the only fucking one that watches wrestling?
But see, that's the thing though, Shane. I feel, I don't know if this would have ever happened to you, which is, I think, why maybe you did get furloughed, is because there's a lot of, I'm not going to mention any names, some great wrestling minds and some great friends that got to the point to where they were basically saying, I know this sucks, but it's not worth the fight with Vince, and right, it's not worth getting fired over. So go for it.
Yeah. There were some good guys in there, but I was like, and maybe that wasn't the hill to die on, but man, I'm a perfectionist. I took twice silly ass gimmicks and made them successful. Because I'm a perfectionist, I will fight you over stupid detail, because I think the devil is in the details.
And the fans appreciate that. The fans notice that.
Yes.
You know, we did a thing a couple of weeks ago during the lockdown. We had tape shows, but I still wanted to put out new content. So we did the Bubbly Bunch. I don't know if you saw the Bubbly Bunch. So we did the Flim Flam Dance, and the winner gets a thing of hand sanitizer. So the next week, I want Sammy to be flaunting the hand sanitizer. He's like, well, I'm going to go to the store to find something. No, you're going to have the exact one. I go to the FedEx. I say, you fill out the FedEx form. He's like, what is it? I'm like, it's an empty container. He's like, an empty container of what? An empty container of hand sanitizer. Why are you sending an empty container of hand sanitizer? He's like, please don't ask. Just how much is it going to cost? Someone's going to be there. And lo and behold, for anybody that was watching that, when we did the Manitoba Melee, when Sammy holds up the thing, it's the same one.
Yeah.
That's the attention to detail that if 10% get it, that's worth it to me.
Yeah.
Right?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's angle. Did you feel like we're, I guess, were you surprised? Like, I guess you're kind of lower on the totem pole as in terms of experience as a producer. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, your attitude, once Vince would understand that, would be much more beneficial to him continue to keep you on.
Yeah. I didn't have the time to work with Vince enough.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I needed more of that. And I didn't have that. You know, there's a couple of things that I went to him with, and I could tell he knew he got it that I got it. And that's important, but I didn't have enough of a relationship with him, you know? So, I mean, sometimes he just wasn't there with the whole, you know, building of the XFL. There's a lot of weeks he wasn't there. And those days are so insane. You know, those meetings are hour longs. They start hours late and you just don't have a lot of time and you can't go worry him with some bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't really have a chance to develop the relationship with him that I wanted. You know, when the furlough happened, you know, it wasn't just a text, as the internet put out. I got a call from Johnny. I had a text conversation with Vince, you know, so.
It wasn't just some kind of thing like, hey, buddy, see you later. Like, he actually talked to you about it.
Yeah. I mean, I had a good, you know, yeah, it sucks. And I mean, they probably could afford to keep us all, you know, they make a lot of money, but I wasn't going to like argue with it. And I was like, whatever, nothing I can do.
It's interesting. Like I said, as we start to wind down, we are winding down. Like it a year ago, had this happened, you'd be working tonight, you know, headlining some indie show somewhere in front of 1,000 people making, thousands of dollars. When I say thousands, because now you get your payoff, you're selling gimmicks, taking pictures, mm-hmm. You're back on the grind. So for a guy during the COVID, what's the plan? Like none of us know what's going to happen, but what are you thinking right now? You know, at home now for however long it is.
Well, luckily I'm in a very blessed situation. You know, I have money in the bank. You know, I wasn't a guy that lived extravagantly, you know, I'm a simple means guy, you know, and I'm very glad that I am. You know, when we did that tour of India, when I saw poverty at that level, like I
came
back and I almost sold my home because I had the biggest house in the neighborhood. And I came home and I just felt like a greedy asshole because I'm a single guy in this gigantic house. And I just saw poverty like National Geographic doesn't do that shit justice. You know, you were there.
We saw stuff that you've never seen. My clothes on.
And did a run in my street clothes, if you remember.
Oh, I did a run in your street clothes?
Yeah, and I started kicking you while you were on the ground. I go, hey, motherfucker, that's my shirt.
That's true. Yeah, I had you run in and I put on Shane's clothes and do the run in on himself. I think another night I wore your whole costume down too, or your cape.
Christian had my cape on.
Oh, that's right.
Christian had the cape. Because I'm back there going, where's my shit? And I thought somebody had stolen it. I'm like, fuck. And I'm all mad. Because I do a run because it's a layered run-in. And I go first. And I'm here. I come to save the day. Like, mighty mouse, I ain't got my damn cape. And then here's Christian running. I'm like, motherfucker. And then for whatever reason, you came in and immediately bumped. And your ass don't never bump. Not that you never bump. But you just, it was an unusual bump. You went down pretty easy. And I started like, hey, that's my clothes.
I was more impressed with myself for putting on your clothes. So I took a bump off nothing. And I was like, look at the shirt. Look at the shirt.
But, but yeah, luckily I'm in a good situation. I'm not dire. You know, it sucks not to have the paycheck coming in, but I can last for a little while. There's a lot of people in a lot worse situations than I am. So I keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I still do my podcast, man, you know, which this should be the 10th year, you know, because I first started Highway to Helms when I left WWE in 2010.
That's so right.
10 years, you know, I take breaks because I did Keeping It 100 for all those years until I just couldn't tolerate disco anymore.
And this is not a joke. This is legit. You guys would literally fight each other in the air verbally. Yeah. Like if you could fight somebody verbally, you guys would be fighting each other.
If he would talk to me like that in my face, I would beat the fuck out of him without a doubt. You know,
would you go back to doing more with Keeping It 100, or are you just gonna do your own thing now?
I did it recently. So I went back because, you know, I love Conan. I love JoJo. And Glenn, you know, he's a little puppy. I just got to smack him on his ass every now and then. But I do Highway to Helms. I started doing some Twitch. This is stuff. I got a couple other projects that I had put on the back burner when I went to WWE because I just didn't have the time. So now I can, like, concentrate on a couple of things. And those are passion projects that I'm
really to do.
So I'm looking forward to that. You know, we got to get the garden started, you know. We're going to plant it last week, but there's a frost fucking in May because it's 2020. Why not? Why wouldn't there be a frost?
How about a carrot for me?
Yeah, I do need some fucking carrots. To Karen, you know, like I said, we're in a blessed situation. Karen works from home. We're spending more time together than ever. The kids are loving it. They don't give a shit. They don't want to go to school. So it's just, you know,
right.
We're making the very best of a bad situation. I'm okay. So,
well, dude, two last things here. We're going to sing happy birthday to Jaden. But before that, you traveled with Lance Storm and Christian. Tell me your favorite Lance Storm travel story.
One of my favorite things was we pissed him off one time because he would get these. We didn't have the GPS. We didn't even have the dashboard TomTom or Garmin or whatever the fuck it was. We didn't have that. But Lance was very good about printing out the maps.
MapQuest.
Print it out to the town, but not the arena.
Right.
And we always found that out. So we would have to get to the town, find a gas station, go in there, ask where the fuck is Joe Blow Arena. And so me and Christian had decided we weren't going to go ask the gas because Lance would be driving, but he would want us to go out and get the directions. It's just, you know, he's very particular. Very particular. And so we decided we're not going to get out of the car. And we're like, no, we're not going in. It's like, come on, guys. I'm doing all the driving. I got us here. And we would do the spill again. Well, if you got us here, just get us to the building. And Christian's over there. And Christian was like this. Not going in. Not going in. Not doing it. Just not going in. Not going in. And fucking Lance, he opened the door and slams it hard as shit and comes in there and gets the directions and comes back. But that's one of the few times because he would never get mad about anything. He's the fucking nicest guy in the world. So. He's one of those guys, man, like, too, I'm so easy to ride with. Whatever you want to do, I can accommodate. Mm-hmm. And Lance is like that, too. We never had any bad moments, like not one, you know, so.
And it's cool to have a riding partner that you can trust and have that chemistry with, you know? Yeah.
I know the two guys, Christian was there for whatever reason. I had to do a media day or something. I wasn't in the back seat. I was always in the back seat because Lance would drive. Jay was in charge of the hotels and I was in charge. I would just make them laugh. I would say stupid shit. They would laugh. And that was the team. And then later on, it became Coach Christian and me when Lance retired. So that was always the deal. And like I wasn't there that weekend and there was two guys and Lance goes, look at those two guys walking abreast. And we would always make fun of his some of his weird sayings. And so Jay reaches back to talk to me about it. He goes, and I'm not back there. And so he calls me right away. He goes, man, I got to tell you this.
two guys walking abreast. I like Lance has now turned into Richard Nixon. Two guys walking abreast.
And then when I called him Hacksaw Book Reed, Lance wasn't there. We were in L.A. and we're in a damn car, a Malibu, because me and Christian, because we're stupid, every time we would go to L.A., we would rent a Malibu in Malibu, California, because we're idiots, people. You have to understand this. And so we're driving, we're rolling in the boot down the 5 or whatever it is, and we're talking about Lance, and I go, yeah, I miss Hacksaw Book Reed. And fucking Christian started laughing, and he's swerving all over the fucking highway. It's like it's been the end of us. I'm over there trying to drive from the passenger seat and keep dying.
Because all Lance does is read books. That's it. You know, Hacksaw Book Read. All right, Hurricane, we're going to sing a happy birthday to Jaden here before I let you go. Okay. Jaden is 8. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
There you go. 1, 2, 3. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jaden. Happy birthday
to you.
You nailed it. Fist punch. Go this way. Go opposite. Other way.
Boom. There you go. Almost. Bam.
Hey. Man, what a great time seeing you here, brother. Man, one of my favorite people ever here in the business. Great guy. Thanks, dude. I appreciate it. I'm sure we'll be seeing each other again soon and doing some more dastardly deeds.
Sounds good, man. Thank you, buddy.
Cheers. Thank you, brother.